You're listening to High Vibe Mindset, where entrepreneurs Aaron Smith, a sports physician assistant, and Melissa Smith, an intuitive eating dietitian and mindset coach, dive into all the juicy details of business, relationships, health, science, and spirituality. Now let's dive in. This episode is sponsored by my free 3-day intuitive eating mindset challenge. This free challenge is for anyone who wants to kickstart their intuitive eating journey and learn how to get aligned to what works for you. This challenge is designed to help you learn what type of eater you are and what might be keeping you stuck in a less than ideal relationship with food or with your body. You can learn how to stop the harmful yo-yo dieting cycle and adopt self-compassionate mindfulness while ditching the harmful all-or-nothing mindset. And you'll learn how to flex those intuitive eating muscles we are all born with that have been buried by diet culture. This challenge is great for those experiencing food obsession and overwhelm. So if you're always thinking about your next meal or cheat meal, if you're just so over calorie tracking and macro counting and everything like that of having to weigh your food and portion out your food, if you find that you're always starting and stopping diets and just nothing seems to work for you, and if you find that you're starting to get anxiety just thinking about food, then it's time to ditch diets and get in touch with your body through intuitive eating. Take action today by joining the challenge and you'll get the guidance you've been looking for straight to your inbox. In just 3 days, you can massively shift your relationship with food and body, discover and eliminate what has been keeping you stuck, and make powerful, lasting transformation toward healthful living. So to sign up for the challenge, simply go to www.intuitiveeatingmindset.org/3-day-challenge. Jacqueline Phillips is an author and personal growth champion who underwent a metamorphosis from self-loathing, socially toxic, miserably suicidal into the happier, peaceful, and confident person she is today. In this episode, we'll dive into how Jacqueline took the steps to reclaim her life and transform her pain into power. In her new book, Comfortably Uncomfortable, The Road to Happiness Isn't Always Paved, is a raw account of the uncomfortable yet deeply transformative journey she embarked. It recounts of the stress and isolation she broke free from and how she reinvented herself. If you feel burnt out, unfulfilled, or not good enough for the life of your dreams, Jacqueline's story will inspire hope, resiliency, and empowerment. Learn how you can transform your past pain into purpose, how to tackle a major goal like writing a book, and how to live a successful and fulfilling life on your terms. So a big theme in your life's work is about reclaiming your pain and transforming it into your power. So we want to dive into the mindset shifts and the specific changes that you made to go from what you say, like rock bottom living, to a place of empowerment that you're at now. So let's go back to the start. Can you tell us about that low point, what that was like for you, and what was the catalyst for change?
So as far as, you know, what a low point looked or felt like, it was just a constant state of uncomfortable misery, everyday discomfort. It hurt to wake up. It, you know, there was so much hate in my head and in my heart where I didn't want to participate in life around me, but it was still happening. And I was choosing not to participate in it. And I was missing out on it. Rock bottom was a combination of things that sort of led themselves to making the final decision. Either I'm going to end this and no longer exist, because this isn't a life worth living and I'm just hurting everyone around me, or I'm going to do the necessary steps so that I can make the changes and start to actually function in my life and in the world around me and as a person, rather than just a shell of hate and anger with a candy coating. It looked all sweet on the outside, but it was nothing but garbage on the inside. It's like those jelly beans.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I feel like I've had those moments, but it's tough, right? So can you tell us about just more? You're really open with your mental health, and I greatly appreciate and admire that. So can you share those uncomfortable moments and what you've learned about mental health and maybe some of the things that harmed you in your mental health journey and helped you in your mental health journey?
So as far as mental health goes, right now it looks like everything's peaches and cream and everything's great, but I will be the first one to tell you that every day is an exercise in building this repertoire of mental health that's good and positive and doesn't feed negative feedback cycles and disappointment. I'm really upfront and honest about mental health because growing up, I was told that I was being dramatic or that it wasn't real or that I should just go take a hot bath or go drink a glass of wine. That's a good tool. You know, I was given maladaptive tools and taught that my mental health struggles were to be hidden and ashamed of, and I was a disappointment for having them. And I remember at my wedding, I had just gotten on an antidepressant and we were getting ready to leave for Jamaica. And I had to have my mother-in-law sneak the prescription pill bottle to me. They went and picked it up for me that morning because I didn't want my mom to see it because I knew she was going to judge me and I knew it was going to start conflict. And I thought, I have to hide this tool that's supposed to help me function and be a better person. I have PTSD, and while I manage the symptoms now and I tell people, you know, it's part of my superpower. For the longest time, it constantly felt like the world was a battlefield and I was constantly on edge waiting for the next strike, whether it was a verbal attack or a physical attack or a mental attack. And it's exhausting. And when you don't have the proper tools and the proper resources, it's really continue to retreat inward further and further and further till you just don't want to engage. Because if I don't engage, I can't get hurt. Yeah. So I kind of had this scorched earth approach to how I handled everything. If I can eliminate the threat of the conflict before it hits me, I win. Mm-hmm. And I was hurting everyone and everything around me in that process. The thing about mental health is that it's a journey, not a destination, because every day is going to be different and you're going to interact with different people and different scenarios. And some days are going to knock you on your butt. Yeah. And other days you're going to break through the finish line and go, oh my gosh, I couldn't do that 6 months ago, let alone 6 weeks ago. Look what I just did today. And knowing that, you know, my mindset shifting towards how can I reclaim this power and not have to, you know, eliminate threat as a mindset. It's a practice, but it's a worthwhile practice.
I love that. And your book mentions, you know, going from low self-worth into living with happiness. So it sounds like that might be one of those core identities or core themes that might be behind a lot of these struggles. Would you agree? Or is there something else that you've learned behind your mental health?
Low self-worth is a catalyst for only making things worse. So when you don't value yourself and you don't appreciate yourself, and most importantly, you don't love yourself, it's really easy to let people cover your boundaries and take them over. It allows, you know, for basically this mindset that you don't have value in the world. So you don't have a place, and it's very lonely. With self-worth, you know, a lot of it came from bullying in my childhood. And, you know, growing up in poverty and having home and food insecurities, there's this constant struggle to just survive. And if that's what you're faced with, it's really hard to think that you're this wonderful, beautiful person, because if you were, why would you be in this place? And no one pulled me aside as a kid and said, hey, this isn't a reflection of you. This is just a situation. You're magic and wonderful and have so much potential and you will get through this. I wish someone had done that for me when I was a kid. But now in therapy, I'm going back and I'm talking to the little girl that I was and going, hey, that's not on you. You didn't make those things happen. You were just a byproduct of a situation. And I will be there to hold your hand and guide you back out through them and bring you to where you are today. That little girl was a really cool chick and nobody gave her the benefit of the doubt and reached out to her. And it's really fun getting to go back and hold her hand and say, I love you. You are loved and you are worthwhile. And this is temporary.
That is so powerful. And I think that's one of the biggest realizations that unfortunately a lot of us don't come to, because like you said, we could be bullied or something that someone says can just affect us and just create that belief. And then we're living with low self-worth and it just affects everything. But it's so important to realize and take a step back and realize it's not about you, and that person could be hurting. And it's definitely about them and not about you. But we don't understand that growing up. And it's hard when we don't have the tools or we don't have people educating us and telling us that. So it's awesome that you've been on this journey and you're learning the tools and that you've created this book to help people understand those tools as well.
I think the pursuit of education as far as mental health goes, we're really just barely starting to scratch the surface just because there are so many different facets to what mental health looks like. And we have this identity of, you know, well, we can throw antidepressants on it. And, you know, we've got Talkspace, which is a great access tool. And, you know, we have therapy, but there's so many different modalities and there's different medications and there's different branches of therapy. Like, I'm a huge believer in dialectical behavioral therapy. And basically what that does is it teaches you how to manage your emotions so that when you have interactions, you maintain control. Because when you have low self-worth and you're constantly under the impression of a threat, emotions are always on the surface and everything is sandpaper. Having another tool set that, you know, isn't as popular. I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity and the wherewithal to go and just take every approach in and say, I'm going to try them all because they're there and I need to know what works for me.
Yeah.
Therapy is not a one size fits all. And it's like trying on the department store. You know, one therapist isn't going to fit just right. So you got to go and try on a different brand or a different size. It's a pursuit. But I encourage people not to give up on the pursuit because the reward way outweighs the effort to find the right fit.
Are you looking to elevate your client experience to the next level? Whether you're in the wellness, photography, or mental health worlds, imagine the impact of offering your client a truly unique and memorable gift that supports them on a personal level. Introducing the Custom Affirmation Card Decks by Soleia. Our custom affirmation decks are designed to empower and inspire your clients, leaving a lasting impression that strengthens your professional relationship. So picture this, your own branded affirmation cards beautifully crafted with imagery that reflects your brand's essence. These card decks serve as more than just a gift. They become a daily reminder of your commitment to your clients' well-being and success. Whether you're a life coach, yoga instructor, therapist, or photographer, your custom card deck supports your client's personal growth, even when they're not in a session with you. So why settle for generic gifts like candles or pens when you can create something truly transformational and beautiful? With Soleia's custom affirmation cards, you can tailor every aspect to align with your brand identity and the values that you stand for. And this process is easy for you. We do all the heavy lifting from design to ordering. Simply choose your affirmations, select the imagery, and add your logo and branding elements. We'll take care of the rest, delivering a high-quality, personalized product. Join the ranks of leading wellness, photography, and mental health professionals who are elevating their client experience with custom affirmation card decks from Soleia. Visit our website today at soleia.co/custom to learn more and start creating your own unforgettable client gifts. That's soleia.co/custom. And I'll spell it out for you. soleia.co/custom. Together, let's inspire positivity and empower transformation one affirmation at a time.
But for someone who wants to start the process of healing, what are some of your suggestions for the first steps they need to take?
Find out what's available to you. You know, for a lot of people, they don't know that either their employer has some setup where they can contact their insurance. The company that my husband worked for was great because you got 10 free visits a year to a counselor. Mm-hmm. And if I hadn't asked, I wouldn't have known. There's free resources available. There's books available. The biggest goal, I would say, is to figure out what is the most pressing problem at the moment and being very vulnerable and being very open. When I hired my life coach, I had verbal diarrhea and I basically laid it all out on the table. And he goes, you know, I usually have to work harder to get stuff from people. My brain, it was, well, I'm spending a lot of money on you. I want my full return on investment. So I have to come clean. It's so important to be vulnerable. It's ugly and it's scary and it's not fun and it's exhausting. But the best things happen when you let those guards down and go, okay, so here's where I'm at. This isn't working. This is how I'm managing, but those tools aren't getting the job done. You know, the IKEA chair is tilted. Nobody gets to sit in it because I'm broken like that. So help me fix it.
I love that. Yeah, it's so important to be vulnerable, but it is definitely scary and hard because we can have that fear on the other side of it, that it's just going to make us feel more rejected and that people are going to judge, not know how to handle it.
You basically had, or from what I can gather, you had about 6 different support groups. You had, it looks like your family, you started going to the gym, you had a counselor, you were on, you got antidepressants, so you had a medical evaluation, you had support group, and you had a life coach. Like, how important were these?
So, we'll go through each one. The life coach was great because I needed accountability. Going to traditional counseling was like going to church. I'd go once a week and I'd get goodness for an hour and then I'd walk out the door and just be the dumpster fire rolling down the road. So counseling's great, but I needed some more accountability. I needed someone that I could reach out to at a moment's notice and go, here's my crisis moment. Help teach me how to get through it. He was also the most expensive, but he was absolutely worth every penny. And from the get-go, I will tell you, I understand just how fortunate I am that I had the financial means and opportunities to go and just take every bit of therapy all at once. You know, medication-wise, I had ketamine in addition to an antidepressant. Ketamine is an FDA off-label use for treating treating depression and PTSD. And basically, it's done in a clinic. It's not like I was going to the back alley and getting smacks of K. Because when you tell people, oh, yeah, I take ketamine, they look at you like,
yeah,
yeah, special K.
Yes, exactly. People are like, wait, you do drugs? And I'm like, no, it's not like that. This is in a clinical setting with licensed professionals. It was great because it helped do physiological work that I couldn't do on my own because I do have a chemical imbalance and there was damage to the tissues in the neurons. That was great. I went and spent time with a trauma therapist and she was the one that would go and walk me back through all of these traumatic events in my life and tell me, you know, we're going to make peace with these and we're going to put these to bed and we're going to take that little girl and we're going to walk her through safely so that she comes out on the other side okay. My husband and my son are amazing. My son is my greatest cheerleader. He's honestly the reason why the book exists. You know, I floated the idea and he goes, of course you can write a book. Can do anything. You're magic. And how can you not want to just chase that dream and go, yeah, because I'm teaching him things by doing this. And he's great. He actually is the one that took the cover photo. Like he believes in me so much. And even on my hardest days, I know that he's looking to me to make the right decisions and to do this the right way and in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. The gym is my escape. They don't pay me for this, but Orange Theory is my favorite place in the whole wide world because I can show up and tune out for 60 minutes and someone tells me exactly what to do. And I'm a banger now.
Yeah. Gun show. Yes.
Yeah. Like I'm in the best shape I've ever been. And a lot like with the counseling, I had to find the right coach that had the right mindset that just melded with mine. When I get in there, I can turn everything off in the world and just be in that zone. And know that when I leave, I'm just better because I did it. And even when I don't want to go, I never regret going. And now it's my favorite place. If I had the time, I'd go 5 days a week. It's a blast. Yeah. It's not a 10-step, here's how to fix your life. It's going to be different for everybody. But as long as you're doing it, that's all that matters. It's not about a 180 overnight. It's incremental change. It's kind of like weight loss.
Yeah.
You have to chip at it every single day. This isn't going to just happen overnight. The book itself was a journey of 4 years of my life, which at 38 doesn't seem like a huge chunk, but in the grand scheme of things, yeah, that's a pretty big set of years. The book itself, honestly, was just a release. You've done all this work, made all this progress, but what are you going to do with it? I'll tell others because I feel great and I want people to feel great. And they may not know what to do. So I'm going to write every single thing down and hopefully it will help someone.
I love that so much. I mean, a lot of us are stuck in the past and reliving those old narratives. So what are some of your like maintenance practices day to day to help you cope with really hard moments in life or rewrite narratives as they come up?
Awareness is a huge key in how I function, you know, beyond these points in my life. I can tell now when I'm starting to struggle and when I'm starting to fall into old habits. And I have to out loud hold myself accountable and say, look, this is where I'm at. I don't want to be here again. Let's evaluate what's in my immediate space and what I can move or rearrange or redo differently so that I can keep moving forward. You know, your body's really good at telling you you're willing to listen. When I'm really, really stressed, my stomach aches all the time.
Me too.
Yes. Like I'm popping Pepto-Bismol, like it's breath mints. And it's like, wait, no, that's me coping when there's something bothering me. You know, when I'm not sleeping well because I'm really worked up about something, you know, I have to, you know, write it out or jot it down, or, you know, there's things that you can do to either, you know, put it out into the universe so that you can let go of holding on to it, or you have to stop and go, okay, is this situation controlling me or am I controlling it? And often when you're in that moment of panic and fear and anxiety and stress, it's because the situation is controlling you. And control is a big thing for me because I'm a control freak, and having to release control of things and go, okay, you know what? I've done all that I can do. The only thing I can control now is how I respond.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest stumbling block, because I want to micromanage everything. I want everything to be just so, and I want to know that I did everything I could and the outcome is going to be good. And I don't take into consideration that there are other people participating. They may have different ideas and agendas and motives that may not align with mine.
And I totally resonate with that. And I think a lot of times if you do have trauma or struggles with self-worth or different things, that you do become a more controlling person, or you're really hyper-focused on other people, but maybe you're not even aware. It's more like you're just trying to control the situation so you're comfortable and they're comfortable. But it just makes them more uncomfortable because they're not on the same wavelength. So it is really important to realize that and release control.
Yeah. On that subject, I believe you had mentioned that you had to remove some things from your life in order to basically kind of break out from your situation, improve yourself and your life. Can you discuss some of the things that you left behind and how that experience was? Was it, you know, people? Was it jobs?
The funny thing is, as you continue to grow and evolve and process these things, you'll find that things don't fit you the way they used to. In the last 4 years, I removed a job. I took on a new job. I parted ways with my parents. I've lost friendships as I've gone through this journey. Some of those things I didn't control, like losing some of my friends. Ones that I did control was reshaping my family. My parents are super toxic, and they really fed into my negative self-worth and my busted mindset. When you have to completely reinvent your character to fit a situation, it's not an authentic situation. And basically, I had to part ways with my parents because everything I did was to their benefit and my detriment. And I'm really fortunate that I have a kid who is watching all this go down and me being strong enough, because he emboldened me and empowered me to go, you know what? This is toxic. This isn't what I want for my family. So we have to make ways and part with them. The biggest thing from it was when my son told me that he felt really uncomfortable around my mom. And, you know, he was 6 at the time. The 6-year-old can stand up and say, this doesn't feel good. Why in the hell am I keeping this person in my life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with my dad, it was much easier. We have distance between us. And I basically said, look, I'm not your priority. I never was your priority. I'm working twice as hard to make this relationship happen with very little give back from you. You're not invested. And I don't have time for people that aren't invested in my family. If you want to be in it, be in it. But if you don't, then just let it go. With my mom, it was a lot harder because I did grow up with my mom and not my dad. And so many of my behaviors and patterns and stumbling blocks came from her and her mental illness and the fact that I was taught to lie and I was taught to cover and I was taught to mask and do all these things and be all these things that weren't authentic to me. So, you know, I'm going through all of this and I have no idea who I am, because all I have is this adult that I built from these behaviors I was taught to do. And so removing her little by little, it reduced conflict. You know, I'd love to say, you know, it was like a Band-Aid and I just pulled and she was gone. And that's not how it works. I mean, literally back in October of this year, she threatened to call the police on me for a welfare check because I refused to answer the front door. Like, take a hint, you know, and then she got a copy of the book and told me exactly what she thought. And it reaffirmed every decision I had ever made, that cutting her out was the right move. I'm just happier without toxic people in my life. Removing toxic things doesn't mean like having, you know, lead removed from your bloodstream. It could be as simple as I'm going to shut off social media because it's toxic and it doesn't do anything for my self-worth. And that's a big adjustment because it is so addictive.
Yeah.
But when you identify things that are toxic in your lifestyle, you have to evaluate how much of it are you willing to continue to endure because it is a poison.
100%. And I think I'm really sorry that you had to go through that with your mom. I think it's super common. And a lot of people have issues with their parents or a spouse and things. But definitely you have to see the signs when it gets toxic. You have to remove yourself to protect yourself. It's the best thing you can do for yourself and for that other person. And sometimes that's what that person needs for them to change, for them to realize, right? They need to lose something in order to make a change. And maybe they won't, but it's okay either way. It's like, no matter what the outcome is, it's the right move when it's very toxic like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's, I'm going to go right back in a circle. It's all about control. I can't control what happens to them, but I can control what happens to me.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I have to make me happy because if I'm not happy, no one's happy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I see a lot of people making excuses for different family members or friends' behavior. Excusing other people, this is just the way they are or whatever, and living with it. I see a lot of people doing that in families as well. Oh, that's the way my dad is. That's the way my mom is. And yeah, we're just going to live with it. And they put up with a lot of abuse emotionally, psychologically, because that's the way it's always been. And they don't know anything better. So I'm really glad that you were able to see the toxicity in that relationship and get out, because a lot of people don't. A lot of people suffer through that for many years, and it basically can destroy their life.
It's definitely a balance, because I think it is good for us to pause and try to reach people and be like, what's going on with you? Are you having a bad day? Or try to understand people's behaviors, because there all obviously usually always is hurt and mental illness and a lot of pain and struggle behind that person's using bad coping mechanisms. So I'm not someone that likes to write people off, but I think once you've tried so many times and it comes to that conclusion of like that person has no interest in changing or improving, you have to let them go. Then that is, it's like, well, I did my part that I can and I tried, but they refuse to learn. They refuse to change. They refuse to meet me halfway. They refuse to take care of their own mental health and seek help, right? They don't think they need help. So with people like that, that don't think they need help, then you can't keep yourself in that line of fire.
Absolutely. You can't help someone that doesn't want to help themselves.
Yeah.
Until I was ready, I wasn't willing to make changes in my life, in my behaviors. I had to reach my come to Jesus moment, even though I'm agnostic, you know, where it was like, okay, this is do or die. Anything before that, you know, it was nice that people would try, but I wasn't there. It doesn't mean that I need to be judged any differently for my journey. It's just that I want people to understand that it's not for a lack of trying that people weren't able to reach out to me. It's that I wasn't there yet my journey. And it's hard to be patient. My husband, he really put himself out there by just constantly being available to me when I was being less than ideal spouse. He had love for me that I didn't have for myself. Looking back on it now, I didn't see it for the gift that it was. You know, he was that person who said, hey, I see a really cool chick in there who has great potential, but has all of this hurt. And he stood beside me when I was going out of my way to hurt people, because if I hurt them, they couldn't hurt me.
You had mentioned that improving communication with your husband was one of the keys for you in your journey. So can you tell us a little bit about how you improve the communication with your husband and, you know, what advice you would give to other people to have the same improvements?
Absolutely. The funny thing about marriage is that it's your coworker that never goes away. You know, and you have bad coworker days where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy I get to go home at 5 o'clock and not see this jerk for the next 8 hours. That's not how marriage works. You have to keep seeing that person until you decide not to. When you've got two people that are in two completely different headspaces and aren't jiving, it's because of a breakdown in communication. I joke that I don't have ESP. I don't even have ESPN. I can't read thoughts. I can't read mine. And by going, hey, what you just did right there really upset me. And this is why it upset me. And I would like to not have this happen again. Can we talk about why you chose to say or do said thing? so that, you know, we don't have this reaction. Or I'm growing up with poverty. I'm really bad about talking about money. It makes me really anxious and it makes me uncomfortable. And we are still breaking apart that dialogue so that we can talk about finances and planning and, you know, where to save and where to spend. And I had mentioned earlier in the hour that dialectical behavioral therapy is great because it helps you manage the emotion behind conversations. You know, they have a worksheet. It's called Dear Man. And I have a link to it up on my website. And basically, when I was going through all of this, knowing that, you know, I had to have uncomfortable conversations with my husband, I would fill out this worksheet from like top to bottom. And I'd sit in front of him and I'd go, okay, so here's the thing. I'm not good at this, but I have this worksheet that's going to be this tool that's going to help me. So bear with me because this isn't going to flow like a normal conversation, but I want to have this conversation with you. And basically having it, you know, written down and broken down into what my goals were for that conversation, it made it easier to manage it and it made it easier for me to stay focused. Because when you start throwing emotions at things, that's when it starts to get difficult and communication breaks down. Having difficult conversations happens with lots of people. I just put in a notice that if a certain contract that I was working didn't improve, that I was not going to pursue the contract anymore and that they would have to find someone else. And that's a difficult conversation because I don't like to throw in the towel. That's not my modus operandi. And to maintain my boundaries, I had to say, look, this isn't working. And if we can't make it work, I'm not doing the work. And I think a lot of the importance behind, you know, good communication, not only is a level of vulnerability, but an identification of boundaries and saying, you know, this is where I draw the line. And if you can't meet me there, then I have to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so important. And I think it's something, I mean, we are not taught how to properly communicate. And in fact, from all our movies and TV shows and everything we see that dysregulated like emotion and just those crazy reactions and stuff, or just ignoring it, right? And stuffing it down and then just thinking you have the problem and it's just all in your head and you don't communicate ever what you're feeling and you just build resentment. So thank you so much for sharing that resource because I think it's so valuable for everyone because we need to learn how to communicate. We're just simply not taught that. And going to therapy and getting specific types of therapy is important. For people who can't really maybe afford this type of therapy.
What type of therapy?
You said dialectical behavioral therapy?
Yeah.
Have you seen that available on Talkspace or BetterHelp or do you know any other resources?
So as far as the specifics behind dialectical behavioral therapy, there are actual just textbooks out there that have, you know, worksheets that you can work through, which is why I didn't put a lot of that into my book because that resource already exists. And you can walk into a Barnes & Noble or jump on Amazon and go, dialectical behavioral therapy. And, you know, you can download to your Kindle or something, you know, worksheets that you can be filling out.
Perfect.
You know, the great thing about resources like this, there are free resources available. I will often post them on my Instagram when I find them because I understand that there is a financial barrier and there's also a mental barrier. You know, it's hard to justify, well, I'm going to spend $700 this month alone on functioning as a person in the world. And it's really hard to step back and go, yes, but I'm investing in my long-term health and happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, we get sticker shock when we look at mental health, but we don't get sticker shock when we buy Starbucks every morning. And I'm guilty. Mine is sitting right in front of me. You can't see it. It's off camera. but, you know, that $3 coffee versus that $100 therapy lesson, one of those is going to last me a whole lot longer than the other. Yeah. So it's delayed gratification, which is not common in society right now. But you didn't get to this point overnight. You can't expect to be over it overnight either. I actually had a bride. So I work in the wedding industry and I had a bride who really stressed during her wedding and bless her heart. She said, you know, I've got BPD, borderline personality disorder. She goes, you know, stuff like this really works me up. And I had mentioned to her dialectical behavioral therapy and she goes, I know, but it's really expensive. I said, but it's not because you're investing in your happiness. Yeah. You know, they say money can't buy happiness, but it can give you the tools to find happiness. And I think those are worthwhile investments. So a lot of this is changing the mindset that you're investing in yourself not just paying a professional. So if you can reframe what your money is going to, you can kind of take the sting off the sticker shock of how much you're spending.
There's so much stigma and we don't have that perspective. Like people don't bat an eye to spend thousands of dollars on a wedding on one day, but then automatically, maybe without even looking up the price or knowing, they just automatically assume I can't afford therapy. And even if you can't, if you're not in a financial place to afford therapy, I love that you mentioned there's even books on dialectical behavioral therapy, which is awesome because, yeah, of course, it's like Google anything, right? Start with a free YouTube video or a book that you can afford just so you can start getting help now. And then maybe eventually, as you continue to seek out those resources, eventually you can get more professional one-on-one help too.
And honestly, there really is a great shift in the mindset that it isn't terribly expensive and there are free resources available. You know, like I had mentioned earlier with my husband's work, our insurance covered 10 visits to a counselor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a resource that if I hadn't gone looking for it, I wouldn't know existed. People's places of worship will often have a talk space kind of situation where you can go in and talk to somebody. AA is great. Even if you're not abusing drugs and alcohol, it's still a safe place where you can go and talk and listen and get support. So there are free resources out there. It's just so important to value yourself enough to reach out. I encourage everybody to just take a moment and think, I'm willing to be uncomfortable for a moment. I can find greater comfort in my existence. And that identity of being happy is worth the fight.
I agree. Acknowledging you have a problem first is one of the first steps. So being vulnerable with yourself first, realizing, hey, you know, I need help, because especially me, the way I grew up, but I think a lot of people as well, it was like, you know, mental health was stigmatized. And I was like, oh, you know, we can work through this ourselves and we don't need help. And just for me, it took years just to be able to accept help from other people. It's like, no, I don't want to owe you. I don't need your help. Like I can do it myself. I'm self-sufficient. We're not an expert in everything, especially on the mental and psychological side of it. There are experts who are definitely beneficial in helping you address issues and kind of uncovering the underlying issues at hand.
And one thing a therapist that I like to follow online, Dr. Kirkondas, mentioned that blew my mind, and it's like, that makes a lot of sense, is that at any given moment, like 50% of the population is struggling with mental health and mental health issues. And everyone will experience something within their lifetime. But we don't think of it that way. I know for me growing up, I mean, I would think it's a small percentage because it's just not talked. It wasn't talked about. And we could see, you know, I think most people are familiar with stats for physical ailments and, you know, can obviously be very comfortable to like, oh, I need to go to the doctor. I'm dealing with this. Let me go get help. But yeah, a lot of us are just suffering with our mindset and mental health issues. And we don't even know we should get help because we think it can't be me. You know, that happens to a small percentage of people. So there's no way that's me. But I think it's important to realize that it's completely normal and that we all do go through that in a spectrum, right? So we're all going to go, we're all on the spectrum somewhere.
So going back to the book, you have a new book out. Can you tell our listeners, like, what can we expect from the book and who did you write it for?
So I wrote the book for anyone who felt overwhelmed with their mental health and didn't know where to even start. I wrote the book for the person who thinks that they are the only person in the whole wide world going through this and that they're all alone. And I am here to prove to you that no man is an island and that you are not alone. There's 7 billion people in the world, give or take. There's absolutely no way in the universe that you are the only person going through these things. And the most rewarding part of this has been when someone has come to me and said, I thought it was just me. And to go, no, you're not alone. There's so many of us. We just haven't had that platform to share our story or have been brave enough to do it. The book is broken down into 3 parts. The first part tells you sort of, you know, how I got to where I am. Don't be scared by the first line of the book. It says, I'm a piece of shit, or at least I used to be, because part of my vulnerability is acknowledging exactly who I was and why I'm not that anymore. The second part of the book will tell you all the steps that I took and, you know, all the things that I've done And then the third part of it is basically, you know, taking all of this work and manifesting it into who I am right now, what I'm doing with it, and how I'm working to do better every day. I wrote the book not for anyone in particular, but because once I had done this journey, I was compelled to do something with it. And knowing that there are so many people that struggle, and it's really hard to be vulnerable to your close circle. So being vulnerable to a book wasn't as scary. And my hope is that it isn't as scary when you pick it up and you read it, and it doesn't matter where you start, easily digestible. I will tell you, I am super intimidated by big self-help books. If you're throwing 400 pages at me, I'm going to balk and go, maybe not so much. I'm busy. I have two businesses. I've got a kid. I don't have a lot of free time. So, you know, the book is written with that in mind. And download it on Audible, and I will talk to you in your ear while you're, you know, driving the carpool lane or doing your dishes, available on your e-reader. So you can take it with you wherever you go. But basically, I just want to empower people to know that they're not alone and that the work is worthwhile, even when it's hard and it's ugly and it's exhausting and you feel defeated. Just a step in the right direction. It's temporary. And I focus on temporary a lot because when I was suicidal, I had to keep reminding myself that this was temporary, that ending it was the only permanent solution to a temporary problem. And it's, I can get through the next 30 minutes. I can do anything for 60 minutes. There's only 4 hours left in the day. I just got to get through this. And knowing that I could talk myself into getting to the next moment was really what saved me.
That's awesome. I cannot wait to read this. Well, not read. I'm going to get it on Audible and share it with everyone. I can't wait for our listeners to download this book and to dive into this book. And thank you so much for just sharing your story with us. I mean, your book is going over so many different themes, and you're just so vulnerable and honest. And I love that. I think that's so helpful for our listeners to help them, and they can relate whether they're struggling with mental health, whether they're struggling with wanting to achieve happiness, but feeling so unworthy, whether they're struggling with suicide, like you mentioned, breakdown in communication, their relationship with their parents, with their spouse. So there's so much value that people can take from this. So I really recommend everyone to get this book because I think it will be very transformative.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I have found my greatest happiness in being vulnerable so that others can feel emboldened.
What are your go-to practices, routines, or resources to stay high vibe?
I love Spotify. I have a bad bitches playlist.
Yes.
So that I can pump myself up. This morning, it was blasting Sierra's Level Up in the car to go get my coffee because I had to get, you know, my mindset right. Being physically active, I'll go jump on my skateboard for a few minutes and do a few laps around the neighborhood. I prefer the longboard because I like the size of it. Giving hugs gets me high vibed. My poor kid, he's doing school from home this year and I hug him all the freaking time. And at 14, probably super over it. And I'm not going to stop because I made him and I'm allowed to. Hugs don't hurt. And with COVID, he's the only person I can hug besides my husband and my dogs. And my dogs, I think, are afraid of me at this point. It's easy. It's easy if you want it.
I love that. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the episode. And I took a lot from it. I learned a lot and got a lot of value. So I know our listeners will too.
Awesome. So Comfortably Uncomfortable, the road to happiness isn't always paved. Guys, we'll leave a link in the section below. Just click it and it'll send you straight to Amazon. You can get it on audiobook, paperback, and on Kindle too. So definitely check that out.
Thank you so much. You guys are the best.
If you loved this episode, subscribe and stay notified for new episodes every Tuesday. Leave us a review with what you liked or what you want more of. And don't forget, stay high vibe.
Do you know these three things are sabotaging your ability to live your high vibe life? First is living in disconnection.
which basically means walking around with no awareness of your body, emotions, or values. And second is letting negative self-talk run the show in your brain. That's just going to make you doubt your potential and stop you from going after your dreams. Finally, it's not having any supportive coping practices or self-care that doesn't take hours or cost tons of money. Because when you're living in chronic stress at home or work, the last thing that feels accessible is a spa day or a meditation retreat.
We have personally struggled with all of these things, and that's why we created the Body Deck. This affirmation card deck has 77 intentionally designed beautiful cards to help you address all three of these high vibe killers in just a couple minutes a day. These affirmations will help you tune into your body and your inner world, practice positive self-talk, and best of all, it's super portable and affordable. For only $33, benefit from the transformative practice of affirmations anywhere you go.
So if you're ready to stop the self-sabotage and start being the highest version of yourself, you'll definitely want to get your hands on the Body Deck affirmation cards. Head over to soulea.co. That's soulea.co to get the Body Deck affirmation cards today. You can also find the link in the show notes.